You are listening to a sermon by Catherine Cooper, recorded on Sunday, February 1st, 2015, at the Point Grey Interminonite Fellowship in Vancouver, British Columbia. The opinions expressed by the speaker are not necessarily those of the church. This recording is licensed for personal use by individuals only and may not be copied, broadcast, or redistributed without the prior permission of the church board. For more information, please visit our website at www.pgimf.org.
The last time I spoke, I started us on an exploration of the body metaphor as used by Paul. We started this exploration by looking at the singular body and how we are to live as whole individuals. I focused on the idea that the body, soma in Greek, refers to all of a person, and that we must think of ourselves in our entirety. This is a challenge for us since so many of our assumptions thrive on dichotomies. One of these is Cartesian dualism, which splits us body and mind, the physical from the more intangible aspects of ourselves. These assumptions are things that we must question. We need to see all parts of ourselves and all parts of each other. This is not an easy thing in practice, as it is rather an idealized state. But it is good to consider. One way that we can begin to do this is to work toward understanding and respecting the similarities and differences of each person. Looking at the whole of ourselves is important because it is as whole people that we are invited to join the body of Christ. Paul writes in 1 Corinthians chapter 6, "Do you not know that your bodies, your soma, are members of Christ himself?" This is the plural body that Paul discusses, the joining of many into one, and it is our decisions, our willing participation, that keeps this body unified. But with that said, there is another current dichotomy that causes us difficulty: the separation of the individual from the group. How many times have we heard how important it is to be independent, self-reliant? While these are undoubtedly good things to strive toward, it seems that little emphasis is put on learning to be in community. This morning, I would like us to explore the tension between self and community, and then look at different ways we can work to be a whole congregation, with balance between the singular and plural bodies. The tension between individuals and a collective society did not arise overnight. It started with 17th century philosophers such as Descartes, Locke, and Hobbes. These individuals shifted the frame of reference from the community to the individual. Descartes, for example, is famous for saying, "I think, therefore I am." Locke and Hobbes started to debate the right of individuals to own themselves, and in so doing, be able to build contracts between individuals rather than make contracts for the entire society. In each of these discussions of the self, responsibility to the collective and individual accountability to the whole were frequently set aside. Locke's philosophy of liberalism grew out of these debates and is based on individual rights and limited government. These ideas are tenets of the Declaration of Independence and the United States Constitution. Though we frequently do not think about where these, quote, self-evident truths came from. Individualism is now so ingrained in Western thought that we frequently think in terms of I, of the self. Westerners grow up believing that they absolutely own themselves. Canadian philosopher George Grant wrote in 1969 that this liberalist philosophy leads to, quote, "the building of the universal and homogeneous state The society in which all men are free and equal and increasingly able to realize their concrete individuality. This idea is echoed by the words of Anna Julia Cooper, an historian and educator from the turn of the 20th century. I found these words inscribed in the United States passport. She wrote, "The cause of freedom is not the cause of a race or a sect, a party or a class. It is the cause of humankind, the very birthright of humanity." But Grant goes further when looking at our cultural need to share freedom and individuality. He asks the question, how can we cultivate freedom for the individual without having it become identified, as it is now, with ruthless self-interest? In other words, how do we balance our individual selves with the greater society, within a smaller community? Which is more important, the individual or the collective? Paul uses the imagery of the body to bridge the gap between individuals and the congregation, the collective. In 1 Corinthians chapter 12, which we just heard, Paul writes, "If our bodies were only an eye, we couldn't hear a thing. And if they were only an ear, we couldn't smell a thing. But God has put all parts of our body together in the way that he decided is best." This metaphor is used to show that our differences, the meeting of many individuals, make of us a stronger congregation. As a congregation, we would not function if we all wanted to speak, or if none of us did, if we all played piano, but none could sing. We are each one of us, individuals, invited to be part of this body and to make a contribution. Unfortunately, I have found that the longer I think about this metaphor of the body, the more problems I have with it. For example, parts of the body could be viewed in a hierarchical way. We value certain parts of the body more, the head, for example, or the heart. One of the most humorous and adroit ways I've ever heard this interpretation of the metaphor critiqued is in one of my favorite novels, Memory, by Lois McMaster Bujold. This passage comes from when the main character, Miles Vorkosigan, is considering his place in the political and social hierarchy. She wrote, "Counts and their heirs, honorably retired from more active imperial service, were permitted by ancient custom to wear their military decorations on their personal uniforms in recognition of their official and historical status as," what was that phrase? "The sinews of the Imperium, the Emperor's right arm." Nobody had ever called them the brains of the Imperium, Miles noted dryly. So how come no one had ever claimed to be, say, the gallbladder of the Imperium, or the Emperor's pancreas? Some metaphors were best left unexamined. The metaphor of the body further falls apart when one sees that even when a body may be considered more whole when all of the parts are present, it is still possible to live and thrive with an organ or limb missing. So I would propose another way to think about a united congregation, with each person being integral and equal within the whole. While I was at college in Beloit, I became enmeshed with the Methodist congregation and was invited to join the handbell choir. I don't know how many of you have participated in bell ringing of any size of bells, but it is a unique challenge in my experience. In my choir, each person was responsible for about 4 bells, 2 notes, each with their related sharps or flats. So for any given piece of music to be played, each person was needed. No one person was more important than any other, because with one player missing, the music fell apart. Playing music in a bell choir required cooperation and patience. It was critical to listen for each bell each voice and to join in accordingly. One way that this is practiced in church communities like ours is through consensus. Each person is invited to speak both of his or her own conscience and what he or she believes is best for the congregation as a whole. This is not an easy practice. Opinions will differ, but it is an ideal that we can work toward. As Paul wrote in his letter to the Ephesians, "Be humble and gentle. Be patient, bearing with one another in love. Make every effort to keep the unity of the Spirit through the bond of peace." We listen to each other and we practice community together. The other thing that playing in bell choir elucidated for me was the need for commitment, the decision to be there for every practice, to listen to the group and play my four bells when they were needed. As individuals, we each relate to community, to the plural body, differently. We will each make the decision of how to balance ourselves within the whole. For myself, I know that as an individual, I do not gain energy by being around and within groups of people, even though I absolutely adore people. I am what is called an extroverted introvert. I like people, but I recharge when I am by myself. I also crave community. I've grown up in and around churches with tightly knit groups of people who are dedicated to each other. Having experienced these relationships, they are no longer something I am comfortable living without. And knowing these things about myself, I can better commit and contribute to being part of a community. But there are also many different types of community that range widely from congregations and neighborhoods to world conferences and humanity as a whole. These communities vary in scale, ideology, and purpose. So we may also, as individuals, relate to these myriad communities in different ways. Think about the different communities that you are a part of. Maybe you would consider your work, a team that you are a part of, a choir that you sing in. In a larger scale, we are part of a city, this province. How do our relationships to these communities differ? How much do you find them to be the same? Some of these communities, such as the country or the world, are so large that it is difficult to believe that our one voice or our few bells can be heard. This does not mean that we should decide not to speak because of frustration with the scope of it all. Sometimes it is within and between small groups of people that changes begin. So it is important to deliberately practice community, to work on understanding how people relate to each other. We can do this in our small congregation and in the other communities in which we participate. In the end, it seems to me that both working toward being whole people and as individuals working toward being a whole community come down to the decisions that we make. In being whole people, we unite the parts of ourselves through our choices, when our actions and our values match. As we know ourselves, we are better prepared to be part of a congregation. In being a whole community, we must each decide to participate, to contribute, and be responsible to each other. Each of our voices, talents, and gifts is unique and important to the whole. We must work deliberately and consciously to value each other, listen to each other, and respect each other as parts of this whole congregation to which we are committed.